Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week, and today we'll be looking at corporate codes of conduct. Earlier this month, the University of Houston Law Center, building upon a program first launched in 2010, released a searchable database of the compliance codes for Fortune 500 companies. Houston attorney Ryan McConnell, an adjunct professor who teaches international corporate compliance at the school, worked with a team of recent graduates and current students to develop the database. When compliance failures occur, whether a foreign bribery violation or environmental issue, stakeholders frequently scrutinize a company's compliance program, he says. The free database is intended to allow any company to conduct benchmarking on virtually every compliance area that might be covered in a code of conduct and to spot compliance trends within their industry. We spoke to McConnell, a former federal prosecutor who now focuses his law practice on corporate compliance issues, about the project, how he became involved, and how companies and their compliance teams may be able to utilize it.
The database started, in 2011, when I left the U.S. Attorney's Office in Houston. I really was looking for a tool to kind of get me in front of companies to do business development. And I'd spoken at a number of conferences, and including Compliance Week's conference in D.C. twice. And one question that people asked typically after the conference was, you know, what are people actually doing? So, you know, you'd give the advice on what the DOJ's view was. And, you know, companies would come to you afterwards and say, you know, well, what are folks actually doing about this issue, or how are they addressing this advice in their program? And so we came up with the idea to look at these codes, codes of conduct, which are available on companies' websites, and draw different compliance areas. And I think we came up with 42 different compliance areas, and I had, at the time, some associates at Haynes & Boone helping me pull out these data sets, and we'd create these massive spreadsheets that showed companies compared to one another across 42 data areas, you know, including the FCPA, trade controls, privacy, issues like that. And then what happened was, you know, over the next 3 years, updating and maintaining the database, was a hugely cumbersome task. I think, you know, together we've probably spent over 2,000 hours, collecting this data. And so the University of Houston was a nice fit because they'd put on a compliance conference a couple of years, the past 2 years, and I've been teaching out at the University of Houston for 5 years, criminal procedure, and I teach a compliance class out there too. So they were interested in hosting the data set, so we got it up online, got it searchable, no registration required, and it's a real nice way for companies to do some benchmarking. So if you're, for instance, putting together a social media policy and you're an oil and gas company or you're a technology company, well, the policy language in the code of conduct and the risk areas for those two companies on social media may be different. So you can pull out the social media companies in the code of conduct database, see how many of them are addressing social media in their policy, what that language looks like. Or you can, if you're another way you can use the database is if you're a company in general, maybe not in the Fortune 500, but you want to see kind of what areas people are starting to address in codes, you can go through and look at different codes of conduct and see how people are addressing different risks.
What does the database tell us about how companies are approaching social media? A look at the data reveals 150% growth in the number of companies addressing these issues in their codes of conduct since 2011.
Yeah, that one definitely is a significant one. The other growth area that we've seen a lot is facilitation payments. We started off with 19 companies back in 2011, and now we're at 47 companies that prohibit facilitation payments in their code. But social media, I think, is an interesting focus, and I think it's interesting you pointed that out. Because the more and more compliance failures we're seeing, we're seeing them kind of cascade on social media. One that comes to mind, Target recently with the social media mention of the data breach. You were seeing social media used in a number of data breach cases. GM has had some issues on social media with their ignition problems. So, I think that's a real issue for companies now, perhaps not in the anti-corruption context, but in a lot of other compliance areas. Say you're a food service company and someone goes and gets sick at your store, you can have social media posts, you can have employees talking about things on social media. I think that's a really big risk for companies.
Are there trends pertaining to facilitation payments?
Only around 150 companies are broaching that topic in their codes of conduct. So most companies are not. Either one, they don't have that risk, the FCPA risk, because of their, they're not international, or number two, they have that risk. It's addressed in their code, and they're just not addressing facilitation payments. So while 150 companies are addressing facilitation payments in their codes, only around a third, 47, are prohibiting facilitation payments. So one interesting thing there is, number one, we have seen an increase in the number of companies prohibiting facilitation payments. But if you look at the total number of companies that address facilitation payments in their code, 150, only a third of them expressly prohibit facilitation payments in their code. So others may discourage them, they may allow them, but we are only seeing that express prohibition in 47% of those companies.
What does the database reveal about corporate privacy policies to address the protection of personal identifying information?
We've seen about a 20% jump in companies mentioning privacy policies in their codes of conduct. Privacy, as you mentioned, is an area that many of our clients and many companies and colleagues that we know are struggling with and trying to put together the right program to address the UK privacy laws and other laws and inconsistent laws often in different parts of the world. So, that's a growing area, and we're seeing that manifest itself in our code of conduct research.
There has been a growing focus on whistleblower programs by regulators, and perhaps in response, the database shows that the number of companies with whistleblower policies has more than doubled, from 34 in 2011 to 71 in 2013. We asked McConnell for his perspective on this.
On whistleblowers, it's another interesting data point you pulled out. We've seen more whistleblower and policy discussions in the code of conduct. From 2011 to 2014, we've seen nearly 100% or over 100% increase, with 34 companies mentioning whistleblower policies or protections in their code going in 2011, and 71 in our latest data set. So that's another area we've seen a fairly significant increase.
What plans are in store for the database moving forward?
Well, so that kind of ties back to your first question, is why give it to the University of Houston and how did they get involved? As you can imagine, updating this data set is a tremendous amount of work for all the folks who've been involved in updating the data set. And, I wanted someone that was going to host the data set, number one, that would continue to give it away for free, and number two, that had the resources to update and maintain it. So the University of Houston's Business and Tax Journal offered to do this, and the students at that journal are right now updating the information for next year, collecting, updating, aggregating. So I don't see the project discontinuing anytime soon. In fact, when I initially talked to the school, they sort of saw the idea of kind of like the Stanford has their securities litigation clearinghouse, and that this would kind of be the University of Houston, code of conduct clearinghouse. I mean, that was kind of, where we saw it going in the future, is this very unique data set. Because if you look back now, many of the codes that are in this database are no longer available on the web. So, if a company's updated their code from 2011 to 2014 and taken it down, it's not there anymore. And so really it's becoming a unique data set that no one else has, and we want to continue to make that available to people for free and continue to be able to use it to spot trends. And the only way to do that is to continue to update it. And, you know, it's nice to have an academic platform to do that.
McConnell stresses that as companies modify their codes, the database may be one of the only tools left that can offer backwards-looking benchmarking.
We saw each year probably a third of the companies updating their codes. And so, you know, probably in two more years with the Fortune 500, all the original codes will be gone. And so just having and being able to see that evolution and that change in companies' policies will be invaluable, and you just can't go back and look at that stuff anymore.
That's all the time we have for today. We've been talking to Houston attorney Ryan McConnell about the University of Houston Law Center's searchable database of the compliance codes for Fortune 500 companies, and he discussed the trends that data reveals. I'm Compliance Week's Joe Mott. Thank you for listening.